Hello, and welcome back to The Worm. I'm your host, Ward Kamak, and today we're speaking with my flatmate of 3 years, one of my closest people here in St. Andrews, and someone I look up to so much, Miss Portia Inzone. Portia is known about town as someone who is very put together, always on time, impeccably dressed, and seemingly has it all together. In the summer of 2022, she took these personal traits and combined them with her plans for the future, law school and becoming a lawyer. She created an Instagram and TikTok, which can be found at Dress for the Law, where she shared her outfits and routines every day while she was studying for the LSAT. Portia remains active on these accounts, having amassed a following on both platforms of people seeking the intersection of fashion and LSAT community. Over the last 2 years, I've watched Portia navigate the test, learning through good times and tough times how to overcome it. And it all paid off, as she will be attending Harvard Law School in the fall. Without further ado, welcome, Portia.
Thank you so much. What an introduction. I'm honored.
So to get us started, where do you call home?
I grew up in Long Island, New York, so my mind immediately goes there. But I split my time in New York City as well. So I would say home is kind of split in that way, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then this is something I was thinking about, a little like icebreaker question to ask. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what were you like as a kid? Like, because you're a very serious person and like you just always know exactly what's going on. And I'm wondering if that was something that came with time or was that always part of who you are?
Well, thank you. I think that was something that's always been the case. I was definitely always known as like the bossy kid, always kind of taking charge of situations. But as a kid, I have always been really interested and like leaned into the arts. I was a theater kid. I sang as a kid. I did a lot of dance. I've always been creative in a certain sense. But as I grew up, I realized that like that direction of creativeness wasn't really my calling. But I've always been drawn to fashion, and now I kind of channel my creativity in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So, and then just because you're on track to be a lawyer, when did you know that you wanted to do that, and why do you feel like that's what you want to do with your life?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in a family business. My parents own a salon and spa, so I've worked there since I was really little. Since I was like 7 years old, I started out by just sweeping the floors and wrapping gift cards. And then as I got older, I was answering the phone. And ultimately now, whenever I'm home, I kind of step back into my role as a manager. So I think, you know, being exposed to business and business operations from a young age, I have always been really interested in it. I think business is obviously amazing. It's what enables my family to have a certain lifestyle. And we're very grateful and privileged for our life and our guests at the salon. It's a really fun environment to be in. But I think I was always drawn to like the higher level of business, like taking a bird's eye view of business and just kind of like managing it and operating it from the highest sense. And so my thoughts, I guess, I was always kind of like thinking of law as a possibility to work with like many businesses across many industries. So as I got older, it just made more and more sense. I've also always been someone that has been really good at like math and history. I've always been like a pretty strong writer. So as I got older, as my skills kind of developed, law made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I worked at a law firm this summer that kind of like confirmed my desire to be a corporate lawyer or just a lawyer generally. And yeah.
Yeah, cool. That makes sense why you're interested in corporate law then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool to see like the kind of trajectory of having grown up in a small business where you see, and so hands-on too, where you really see the way that like things work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're so informed now, whereas I feel like compared to the people you'll be working with one day or maybe going to law school with, they don't necessarily have that kind of background and inner knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I didn't realize this when I was first applying to law school, but I'm very much in the minority of people that go to law school right after university. Mm-hmm. I always thought, you know, college, law school, lawyer. But now it's really encouraged to take at least 2 years off to work before attending law school. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely in the minority. In my class next year, I'll probably be within like 20% of people that came from straight from college. So yeah, I think, you know, as law school, it's a very expensive and time consuming thing. So these admissions committees and schools generally just want to make sure that the students are 100% invested in and want to be a lawyer. So
yeah. Wow. How do you think when you were applying to schools, you conveyed that personal interest and like dedication that really made them believe that you were all in on it?
Definitely. I think a part of the reason why I had a strong application was because I had a very cohesive story about who I am and why I want to be a lawyer. And I think, so they call it a KJD, someone who goes from kindergarten to get their JD, goes straight through. So as a KJD, it was really important for me to tell a very compelling and strong story about why I want to go to law school and why I'm ready for law school now. Mm-hmm. And I think through my personal statement and the interviews I had with different schools, I was able to demonstrate that. Mm-hmm. And say it in a convincing way. And I think that's a large part of the reason why I was successful.
Yeah, totally. And I think also just like from like in my own personal experience of interviewing people for like clubs in St. Andrews, you can see so easily when someone is really genuinely interested and you can feel that. Whereas when someone's just kind of making it up because it seems like it's what they think they should be doing, you can see that as well. And I think that's not necessarily something that you can prepare for. It's just innate and like a human communication energy type thing of like, is this person actually invested in this?
Yeah.
Totally. So dressed for the law. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it. What is it? Where did it come from? How did you get started with it?
Well, you gave me the best introduction ever. But so as you said, I started the account in May 2022 as I was starting to study for the LSAT. So yeah, it just kind of started as me getting dressed every day to study. I've kind of my fashion philosophy is, you know, look good, feel good, do good, and be productive. I feel like if I ever want to be productive, I have to have a good outfit on. And so I kind of just leaned into that when I started to study for the LSAT. I would wake up every morning and get dressed and hit the books, kind of. And I decided to document it on TikTok and Instagram.
Mm-hmm. So your philosophy around fashion, did that come from any part of your growing up? Or is that something you found on your own, like the importance of getting dressed every day for your own personal mindset and productivity?
I think it's both nature and nurture, if you will. My parents are very stylish people. They love fashion, high fashion. They love to look nice and put together. So definitely always had that influence. But I also just think it's who I am, kind of. My mom always jokes that like I started picking out my own outfits at 2. Mm-hmm. So I think I've always kind of been into it.
Mm-hmm. When do you feel like your personal style really solidified, and how would you describe your style?
I honestly still don't think it's solidified because I look back at pictures of myself even 6 months ago and I'm like, girl, what are you wearing?
Really?
Yeah.
With like what is an example of something that you would not wear today?
I mean, I think my style is always evolving. So I think, you know, I'm learning every day what my proportions are and what silhouettes look best on me, what colors look best on me. So even things like I've just learned that I really don't like the way like very harsh or like clear white looks on me. Hmm. Like I think a really white color doesn't look good on me. I think I look better in creams. Mm-hmm. So even looking at outfits where I'm wearing that harsh white, I'm like, oh, It's kind of drowning me out. I wish I pulled for a different shade of white. But yeah, I think to describe my style today, I would say it's polished. It can be a little bit edgy, but it's always classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely see that. Like, I feel like the things that you wear are not there. Well, I think that you do take a lot of inspiration from other people on the internet, but it's not like you're wearing what every other person in St. Andrews or every other college student is wearing. Like, it's very much solidified, and I feel like it represents you. Who are some of, like, your fashion icons? Who are people you really look up to, either from recently on, like, Instagram, or people in the past who you looked up to when you were growing up and kind of, like, figuring out your style?
Mm-hmm. Well, growing up, definitely my Aunt Lori, she's like quote-unquote aunt, she's my mom's maid of honor and one of her best friends. She worked in the fashion industry. She's always just been a huge fashion icon of mine. I love the way she dresses. It's a bit, I would say it's a bit more edgy than my style and maybe a bit more bold, but still, I just love her fashion sense. And my mom as well. We definitely don't have the same style, but just she, I joke that she's the blonde Kris Jenner. She has a short haircut, platinum blonde, and she's always wearing a blazer. So I definitely get my love of blazers from her.
Mm-hmm.
And current fashion icons, as you said, I have an Instagram account. I love to follow people in the fashion world on Instagram. And off the top of my head, Kelly Rutherford. You might know her as Lily Vanderwoodson from Gossip Girl.
Yes. Oh, my God.
She is my queen. I love her. I think the whole internet is obsessed with her right now because she started posting these mirror selfies of her outfits every day.
Oh, my God.
I think she lives in Paris. She's just so chic. I love her.
She is. Yeah. She really, like, her character, I feel like, aligns with who she is as a person.
Totally.
In, like, the chic vibes.
Mm-hmm.
How old is she?
I want to say she's mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's cool. That was a great answer.
Thank you.
Where did the idea of Dress for the Law come from?
So I remember it was March of second year, so March 2022, and I thought of the idea one day, as I do. I feel like me and you are such ideas people. We're always coming up with a new idea, bouncing ideas off of each other. So I came up with the idea, but I was like, okay, having a social media presence is something that I need to take seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat on it for about 2 months and then I decided to start posting in May. I came up with the idea. So I don't really know how I came up with it. I remember I was sitting in my bed at our old flat 7A and I came up with the name idea. And then, you know, I will see anything as a sign. I'm just one of those girls. You know, I'll take anything and turn it into a sign. So the next day, I went to the gym and I was taking a, I'm so basic, I apologize in advance for this sentence. I was taking a Cody Rigsby Peloton class. And I look at, and he always like calls out people's names on the bike to say good job or whatever. And he calls out Spin for the Law. And I was like, oh my God, this is a sign from the higher powers that I need to make this account. So I
like,
took it.
What are the odds?
I know.
That's insane. Spin for the Law, Dress for the Law.
Yeah. And it was the next day.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is it. I got to do this thing.
Yeah, that's definitely a sign. So you talked about your kind of hesitation or seriousness towards creating an internet presence. What have you learned throughout the process? What were like your hesitations in getting involved in putting yourself out there in a very public way?
So I want to be a corporate lawyer. I will be a corporate lawyer one day. And I also knew I would be applying to law school, obviously. So I just wanted to tread lightly and make sure that everything I was putting out there was professional and wouldn't reflect poorly on me if an admissions committee or my future employer saw it. So yeah, I wanted to take it very seriously. Like, I'm not out here posting videos of me drinking with my friends or wearing super skimpy outfits. Nothing wrong with either of those things. It's just like, even if I do them, I'm not going to post about it. So that was something that, you know, I really wanted to be careful about. But needless to say, I still think that like throughout the experience of posting on these platforms, I definitely at certain times got caught up in the desire to go viral and just the virality of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely posted a lot of videos. I've deleted most of them. And, you know, I definitely regret some videos that I've made. But at the same time, I think it's just like totally a learning process.
Mm-hmm.
And day by day, I'm just learning like how to portray myself as best I can in a really short amount of time, which is really hard. Like, it's so easy to get the wrong impression of someone off of a 15-second, 30-second clip. And so, you know, every time I post, I feel like I'm even more specific with what I say, how I present myself. It's not an easy thing to do,
yeah.
But I'm learning.
So, and I kind of know some about this just because we've talked about it. How would you say the communities of people on TikTok versus Instagram differ? And do you think that that's a reflection of like the people themselves and their interest in like studying for the LSAT or fashion? Or do you think it's more of a reflection of the platform and just the way that the algorithms work?
I could talk about this all day long, mm-hmm. and I need research done on this. But I think, I don't know. I feel like there's such a recipe to follow if you want to succeed on TikTok. And I get it, and it makes sense, and I think it's easy. You need a hook. You need something compelling. You need a certain aesthetic. And I'm good at that. Like, I can push out that content all day long. Do I want to? No. I don't want to do that. And I also am not enticed by the idea of, like, going viral anymore. I very much just want good people following me that really value who I am, what I have to say. So, yeah, TikTok makes sense to me. Instagram makes no sense to me. I feel like you can have it all. You can check all of the boxes, but the algorithm just doesn't make sense. I don't get it. I feel like it's so much harder to grow on Instagram than it is on TikTok. Maybe it's because it doesn't favor personality as much. I don't know. But just like in the sense of my followers, I have a much bigger following on TikTok than I do on Instagram, kind of because of that. Like I said, I just don't know how to grow on Instagram, even though now I put most of my effort into it. But I think also a big difference with TikTok is that people have anonymous accounts.
Yeah.
So they hide behind them all day long and they don't think twice about trolling someone. So yeah, I feel like you don't see that as much on Instagram. I feel like my Instagram followers are all amazing people. And I don't know, they're all so nice and so supportive. TikTok, it's such a gamble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think just as someone who like, well, I don't have TikTok anymore, but I used to, and I still have Instagram. I think like the process of going to TikTok and going on the For You page is so easy. And then you're shown so many different videos. Whereas with Instagram, I feel like people are more drawn to go on their homepage and just look at the people that they follow. Whereas, I mean, I watch Instagram Reels way too much, but I think it's more, it almost feels like, this is so weird to say this about social media, but like more of a personal investment,
yeah,
in a way of like going to the Reels page or the Explore page on Instagram and seeing what's there. And I think also you can curate it maybe more than you can TikTok. I think TikTok, that it feels like the algorithm changes more quickly on TikTok with what you're watching, how long you watch it for, what you like. Whereas with Instagram, I feel like it's just more, I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Totally. I completely agree with that. I feel like, yeah, Instagram, it's so much more of a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And TikTok, I think it's also just because like the way the platform works. Like on Instagram, when you follow someone, you're probably going to see their content. It's going to show up in a story. I feel like TikTok, it's so easy. I feel like I'm not even given all of the videos that the people I follow post.
Yeah.
It just all gets kind of lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Instagram definitely feels like more of a commitment. But at the same time, I don't know if this is like shallow of me, but I like following people on TikTok more than I do on Instagram, because I feel like Instagram, it's so superficial And although I like to create that type of content more, like I love to just take a picture of my outfit and post it on there, I prefer TikTok in the sense that I feel like I get real insight into who these people are, what they're all about, versus on Instagram, I have no idea. I don't even know what most of these people's voices sound like.
Mm-hmm. And yet, at the same time, you feel like you've built more of a community of like-minded people on Instagram.
But the only reason I think that is because most of these people came from TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah. It's harder for people to find you randomly on Instagram.
Right.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's so weird thinking about these different apps because on paper they are so similar, but then in the process of using them and getting to know them and liking things and curating whatever you want to curate on in like what you follow, they are so different just in like the feel of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah, it makes sense that growing platforms on them would be really different too. And yeah. I think that if you look at anybody who's famous on TikTok or has a large following and then you look at their Instagram, they always have way less on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's more of a commitment to go to someone's Instagram page and hit follow, and people just aren't interested in that unless they're really like invested in what that person is, what kind of content they're creating.
Absolutely. Someone, if anyone's listening to this, please do some research on it because I need the answers.
Yeah, for real. I think it's something everyone is like curious about. So you said that you've deleted a lot of videos on TikTok. Why did you delete videos?
Well, first of all, I just cringe myself out so much. And you know the saying, if you're not cringing, you're not growing. Totally believe that.
For real.
And totally take that to heart. I'm glad to be cringing, but I just don't need that content out there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like day in my life videos. I think at the time, like it's fun to consume and it's fun to like show people what you're doing. But like, oh my God, I can't look at these videos a year out. I'm like dying inside. So
when were you making those?
All throughout. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Just a lot of different times, whether I'm in St. Andrews or at home. So yeah, gotta go.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. If you're not cringing, you're not growing.
Mm-hmm.
I want that like tattooed on my arm.
No, actually.
In regards to Dress for the Law as kind of happening alongside your LSAT journey, how do you think having this account, do you think it impacted the way that you approached the test or studying for the test at all?
I definitely think so, in good and bad ways. I think that going into studying for the LSAT, I had a really strong understanding that it is a mind-body test. You can't just approach this test casually if you want to be a 170 plus scorer. If anyone doesn't know the LSAT, it's scored out of 180. And this test, the score that you get on this test is ultimately like the biggest factor in your admission cycle, that and your GPA. Not as much for people coming from international schools because we don't have GPAs, but you know, for people in the States, LSAT and GPA, those are like the first things that an admissions committee is going to look at.
Mm-hmm.
They really care about your score and your GPA for their own statistics. So you have to place a lot of emphasis on it. I knew that if I wanted to be scoring in a certain area, I had to approach it with, or I had to just like give it my all. So I knew that, you know, I wanted to get dressed every day. I needed to get a certain number of hours of sleep every night. I needed to eat well. I would wake up, have the same morning routine every day, eat the same breakfast, and kind of just set myself up to be in a study headspace and, you know, get the most out of my studying hours. So I think that posting on TikTok really allowed me to stick to that because it was like, I owed it as much to myself as to my followers to show them that like I was taking this seriously and I wanted to get the most out of it. So I think it was helpful in that sense. I think it was hurtful in the sense that I put so much pressure on myself. I would have put definitely a lot of pressure on myself had I not been posting on TikTok, but I think the fact that there was an audience involved made me internalize my score that much more.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like, you know, whatever I was scoring, whatever scores I got, it was kind of like defining me. And that definitely isn't a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are, if you had to redo the process of studying for the LSAT all over again, what are some of the things you would change or some advice that you would give yourself this time 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't, because I'm just really happy with how everything turned out. I think I've become such a stronger person because of how tumultuous of a process it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously, if I could change some things, I would. I think that the biggest thing is you have to be focused on excellence and not perfection. I am definitely a perfectionist and, you know, I just want to do things as perfectly as possible. But I think when I shifted my mindset to excellence and just doing the best that I can on whatever question I was on whatever section I was doing, I think that was a big shift for me. I would also say that, you know, ask for help. I self-studied for the first half of my LSAT experience. I took my first LSAT, like prior to that, I had just self-studied and I got really far. I'm really proud of myself for how far I got. But at a certain point, you can't identify your own weaknesses, and like a coach is really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest working with a coach from the start, not necessarily to teach you the material of the test. I think that online courses or textbooks do that really well, and I don't think you need a coach for that, but more so for the soft factors of the test, what I was describing before, everything from your routine to your mental state. This is a skills-based test. It's not like a math test where you either know the material or you don't. This is like game day,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on how much you slept, what you ate before, how you're doing generally, your performance on test day is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So my coach, I ended up working with a coach after my first LSAT, and she was basically like my LSAT therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I needed it so badly. I didn't realize how much I needed her until I started working with her.
Wow. I love that too. Excellence, not perfection. I want that tattooed on my other arm. Like, oh my God, we're getting all the mantras out of this episode. But it's so true. Like, so you started studying for the test in March, right, of 2022?
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't officially done with the test until January of 2024.
Yep.
So looking back at yourself 2 years ago, what was like your ideal timeline that you kind of envisioned for yourself? And what do you feel like you've learned since that kind of got derailed in some ways or just rerouted? And yeah, what would you say the biggest takeaways from that have been?
So originally my idea was to study for the LSAT the summer of 2022. I was going to take either the August or the September test. I ultimately took the September test. I was planning on just taking it once and moving on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
That did not happen.
How many times did you take it?
I took the LSAT 5 times.
Wow.
I took it September 2022, I scored a 170, which is a great score, mm-hmm. but I knew that if I wanted to get into a certain school, I had to be up like a few points at least. And so then I took some time off and I started studying again in January of 2023. And I studied, that was when I started working with a coach. I signed up for and took the April test. You'll remember because mm-hmm. I was a freaking maniac at this point. I would be like, guys, I'm studying. Everyone be quiet in the flat.
Yeah.
Or I would, whenever I would take a practice test, I would like emphasize, please be quiet.
Yeah.
Our doors in that flat were so loud. So I was just like a nutcase. So I was taking the April test. I was halfway through the test before our Wi-Fi crashed. I was having like really bad connection issues,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't able to log back on. So I only completed half the test. I had to cancel my score. And it sounds silly, I guess, if you don't know this test, but like when you put your whole life and everything into this test, and it doesn't work out for the second time, it was like my whole world came crashing down. Not to be dramatic, but it was just like everything I was working on, everything I valued myself for, I was kind of like robbed of that opportunity because of Wi-Fi. Like, what the hell? And I was just like, I think I really experienced trauma in that, because again, it's just like everything you're valuing yourself for is gone. So yeah, like I said, I had to cancel that score. And so then after that, I went home. I immediately pushed myself to keep studying and take the June test. I should not have done that. Oh my God. I needed to go to therapy after that. I did not need to keep studying for the test. My idea was like, oh, I'm in the zone now. Like, I should just keep going and try to take the test again. No, give yourself time, please, if anyone else is going through something like that. So I took the test again. Needless to say, it did not go well. I scored worse than I basically had ever scored in practice. I had like an anxiety attack halfway through the test. I think, again, it was just that trauma of thinking the Wi-Fi might crash again and the test might fail. And then I took the test again. I got the same score as the first time. The whole test felt good. And then in the last section, I just like panicked and had another like anxious episode. I don't really know what happened. And then I finally took it again in January 2024, got my breathing techniques down. I literally would, I just had to change my approach to the test so many times to accommodate for the anxiety that I developed. I'm really not an anxious person at all. But again, this test, it was just such a tumultuous experience, and I definitely experienced some level of trauma throughout it, that I had really bad test anxiety. And so I adapted a lot of strategies and breathwork techniques and meditation to enable me to succeed. So
did you, those like little exercises, did you figure those out on your own, or did you learn those from people who also have test anxiety? And what were they? Like, what are some examples of things you would do?
Yeah, so I listened to a few podcasts. I think the biggest thing was feeling like I was alone in this process. Because you just hear about everyone's final score. And you're like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. I just want a 175 or whatever it is. But so yeah, when you are experiencing anxiety, or if you're just not scoring how you want to score, it's so lonely. Especially at St. Andrews, where no one else is really applying to U.S. law schools. I don't know if that's the case at U.S. schools. I would assume there's like more people applying. But yeah, so I just felt really alone. So I started listening to some podcasts about people that had taken the test, dealt with anxiety. But most of the strategies that I used, I came up with on my own. I also, so I worked with a coach from Apollo Test Prep. I'm actually a coach for Apollo now, if anyone wants to work with me or needs LSAT coaching.
Plug it.
You can reach out to me on Instagram and I'll set you up. But they really emphasize like the mental conditioning of the test and meditation, and just their approach to the LSAT was like very much aligned with me and my struggles. So I use some of their just like general LSAT strategies. Like, for example, on the reading comprehension, really just reading for structure rather than trying to like comprehend the whole passage and then move into the answer choices. This, I'm not going to continue speaking this way because I know it's really boring for anyone that doesn't know the LSAT. But yeah, then I created my own strategies. Like on the logical reasoning section, for example, section gets harder as you go along. So after the first 10 questions, I would take 3 deep breaths. Then 5 questions later, another 3 deep breaths. 5 questions later, another 3 deep breaths. And I literally told the proctor that was, you know, there's, I ended up taking the exam online. So the person that was like looking at me through the screen to make sure I wasn't cheating at the beginning of the test, I was like, just to let you know, I'm going to be doing some breathwork exercises. I'm sorry if I look really weird or if I look like I'm praying. But I need to do this to get through.
What did they respond? Or you can't see them, but you know that they're watching you.
Exactly.
That's so freaky. That's like one-way glass but on the computer.
You can see them for like 2 minutes at the start, and then they like hide their screen. So I was just kind of like talking to my computer.
Okay, so coming back to dress for the law, do you think that this is something you're going to continue going into the future and at Harvard Law School?
Definitely. I, first of all, can't even believe that I'm going to Harvard. It's not real life. I don't know. I'm just still processing it. I don't know when or if the imposter syndrome will ever go away.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also just the fact that I've been going through this process for so long and I'm so used to being disappointed that, like, my brain literally can't process the fact that it's over. And so every morning I wake up, I'm just like, Portia, you're going to Harvard Law School. Like, mm-hmm. What the hell? So that's really cool. And I'm just really grateful. But I definitely think this is something I'm going to continue when I'm there. I don't know how I'm going to do it because I don't have my photographer, Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I going to do without you?
I'm the creative director.
Exactly.
Of Dress for the Law.
Exactly. But yeah, I honestly, in the 2 months that I created the idea for the Dress for the Law, the 2 months between creating the idea and actually starting to post, my biggest question was, am I in it for life or am I not? I'm someone that, like, in all areas of my life, I'm either in it or I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm very black and white in that sense. And so I was just kind of like thinking about that for a couple months. And ultimately I decided, yes, I am. And I still am. I definitely go through some periods where I don't post. Like the last month, for example, I was just in the law school application process, just like maniacally checking my status checkers and my email every 5 seconds to see if I heard from a school. And I just didn't have the bandwidth to post a picture of my outfit. And I was like, I don't care about my outfit, honestly. I need to figure out my future. So in the last month, I didn't really post. But yeah, so it ebbs and flows, but it's something that I always want to do. It brings me a lot of joy. It's a creative outlet for me. I'm always going to get dressed, so there's always going to be content to post.
Mm-hmm. Something else that we've talked about is your perspective on being a corporate woman and how women dress in the workplace. So I want to, like, would you share a little bit about that? Like, what is your approach to dressing in the workplace, and how did your summer internship last summer kind of impact your perspective?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think my style, I actually feel my best in, like, business casual, business formal attire. I just feel so empowered in a suit, a pantsuit. I'm someone that's literally always wearing pants. It's actually a goal of mine to start wearing dresses and skirts because I just don't, and I feel like I need to venture out and, like, be a little bit more fun with the things I wear. But I love business attire. Like I said, I feel very empowered by it. But I do think that, you know, the way that women dress in the workplace can either be something that really empowers them, really enables them to work at the top of their game, or not. It's either kind of like something that's neutral or something that can be a huge asset. I think that whether it's getting dressed every day and studying for the LSAT or getting dressed every day and going to work, at least the way my brain works, feeling good in an outfit really enables me to, like I said, work at the top of my game and do my best.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was working at a law firm this summer, I really put a lot of thought into my outfits. And yeah, I feel like I did a really great job at the internship. And it was just so nice to be in that environment and to kind of dress professionally. I always feel like I'm on the professional end of casual wear wherever I am. I always kind of feel a little bit overdressed. So it was nice to be in that environment.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really interesting reflection how there's really no conversation, at least like colloquially, of women dressing in corporate settings. Because obviously, like, you go to certain stores and they have like workplace clothes, but there's not a conversation around building a really solid, good, cool, nice wardrobe for working in a corporate environment. And I think it's such a reflection on the fact that until recent decades, women weren't in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And for men to get dressed, they just put on a button down and a tie, or maybe they wear a suit, but like they have a formula that they go to every day and that's it. So how do you feel like, do you want kind of those conversations around women getting dressed for corporate environments to change? And what are some of the things that you would like to see?
Well, first of all, I can talk about the differences in men and women's style all day long. Also, just like the exploitation of women in the fashion and beauty industry. We're given so many options. We have skirts, mini skirts, dresses, halter. Like, we have so many different kinds of clothing. And as much as it's like fun, I also think of it as something that suppresses us and keeps us behind, because like it's on us to like keep consuming, buying more. We have to buy makeup, or we don't have to, but you know, the cultural norm is to like buy makeup and skincare. And like, I do think that like all of that is holding us back, because we're just consuming so much, and men literally throw on a button down and a tie and call it a day.
Mm-hmm. And it's been that way for forever.
Exactly. So I think that what I hope is refreshing for people that follow me is that like, I don't shop a lot at all. I am very specific with what I buy, and I let my normal wardrobe kind of bleed into my workwear wardrobe and vice versa. I think that the way I shop so that I can wear a certain piece in many different environments. And I mean, I think that's the best way to dress and the best way to shop, from a financial standpoint, also just from a mental standpoint. I think women have a lot of decision fatigue when it comes to clothing and style, because there are just so many options. And so a lot of women ultimately have like a work wardrobe and a going out wardrobe and a day off wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that to really cultivate a wardrobe that you actually wear, I think there should just be one category, and it should just be you, you know, like mm-hmm. whatever your style is.
Mm-hmm. What are some pieces that you think everybody should have in their closet?
I could wear a black turtleneck bodysuit every day for the rest of my life, and I do. Just like long sleeve or short sleeve bodysuits, whether it's in the winter and you're using it as a layering piece, or if you just throw it on with a pair of jeans, a pair of trousers, and a loafer or a flat or a heel. I think bodysuits are, or should be, every woman's best friend. I think they're really flattering because you don't have to like tuck anything. They just like fit to your body. Gorgeous. Love them. I would look at Wolford on the pricier end, or Skims is a really good option. I would also say high-waisted pants. I really think high-waisted looks good on everyone. Some people that have like really short torsos don't like them, so that I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think any like high-waisted pant at least looks very good on me and you.
Thanks.
That's a big thing. And then I would also think about, I just think the biggest thing is thinking about proportions. So like if you're someone that is more petite, you want to reach for shoes that elongate your foot and elongate your legs. So like a pointed toe. And maybe you want to avoid, you want to reach for things that really enhance your features. And I think some people are always like, oh, well, like that's easy to say because you're XYZ, you have like, you know, typical proportions, I guess you could say. But like, you know, everyone struggles with everything. Maybe some people are insecure about certain parts of their body that they don't want to show. So you just have to kind of take everything into consideration and think strategically about what you're buying, so that you feel good in what you wear.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all it comes down to.
How would you recommend people who don't know anything about how to maybe like typify their proportions? How do you think people can learn more about that and start dressing for the proportions?
I really think, as much as Instagram is like a beast and not good to sit on all day long, I really think it's valuable in that you can follow people that have your body type. I think obviously it's kind of an unfair category for like some people. They might not see their body type represented, but I do think there's an influencer or a creator out there for everyone. Even if their style isn't the same as yours, if you just think that like the clothes that they wear is flattering on them, you can take that and take notes from that.
What's your formula for building an outfit? And do you think that this applies to your personal style, or do you think it's something that everybody can kind of build on?
Yeah, I think that I have a pretty simple style, I would say. I think a formula for me is, again, everyone's going to have like somewhat of a different formula, but based on their proportions, but I feel my best in a pair of pants. So typically pair of pants or jeans, typically something that's high-waisted. Again, a t-shirt or a bodysuit I feel really good in, and then typically a loafer for me. I think in the summer, like, that would be the whole outfit. In the fall, maybe I'd add a sweater over top to layer over, or a light jacket. In the spring, it could be a trench coat. In the winter, it could be a sweater and a heavy jacket, and you could kind of have fun with the jacket. But yeah, I think my style is pretty simple, and so that's the go-to for me.
Well, Portia, thank you for joining me on The Worm today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
This was fun. Bringing our kitchen table conversations to The Worm.
Exactly.
If you're listening along and you want to check out Portia's Instagram and TikTok, it's at Dressed for the Law, as you've probably heard 50 times in this episode. But check it out. Look at the photos that I take around town. They're super good. I'm proud of them. And yeah, and then also if you are interested in LSAT tutoring, application consulting for law school things, you can DM Portia at Dress for the Law, and also she tutors for Apollo, which, what's their website?
It's apollotestprep.com. So I'm an LSAT tutor, and I'm also hoping to start doing application consulting. So on either front, if you need me, I'm there. And if you just need any general advice, feel free to DM me. Always happy to help.
Mm-hmm. Yes, do all of those things. And if you love The Worm, be sure to give a girl 5 stars on whatever platform you're using to listen to this today. And be sure also to check out the Instagram at @theworm_podcast to keep updated on episodes, new episodes, all that jazz. Thank you, as always, for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye.